It's got a death curse.
Don't bother me, be like me. And then who will help you up in the sewer?
Just like having a wardrobe.
What's the boogeyman?
As a matter of fact, it was.
Last show, we gave you an in-depth look at one of the most twisted minds of the last century. We delved deep into the life of a true psychopath and the atrocities he committed. And we hope you kept your seatbelts buckled, because we're going down that road again.
Did you really kill your mama?
What?
Did you really kill your mama?
I guess I did.
Last time we dealt with a true psychopath who couldn't really comprehend that he was doing wrong. This time, we're meeting an absolute animal who knows full well he's evil. He just doesn't give a shit. And even worse, he likes it that way.
It's always the same, and it's always different.
What do you mean?
It's either you or them, one way or the other. Ain't that right?
All you Walking Dead fans out there, you're never gonna look at Michael Rooker the same way again. This was the movie that put him firmly on the map. Tonight's show, we're looking at John McNaughton's Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer.
Lucas led lawmen to dozens of murder sites. Lucas's knowledge of the killings was so precise, 15 cases were closed.
On June 11th, 1983, Texas Rangers arrested 47-year-old Henry Lee Lucas for the murder of two women. To law enforcement's amazement, Lucas not only confessed to those murders, but also to hundreds of killings that he and his partner Otis Toole committed in the southern United States. Soon after, he was the most notorious mass murderer in the country.
Him and his buddy Otis Toole. Well, everybody calls him Otis. It's Otis Toole. I watched a documentary on him today. Everybody's like Otis. All the cops.
O-T-I-S.
Yeah, they called him Otis Toole.
Yeah, it's a choke on a dick.
Choke on it. So anyway, Otis, whatever you want to call him. He's Otis in this movie, right? This pair went around and would just kill people for kicks, for sex, for money. They'd rob people. They were just really nasty characters. And when they got caught in 84, they loved the limelight so much that they were confessing to like 3,000 different murders. That like
300 plus, I think, at once.
Every law enforcement agency in the country that had a cold case file was flocking to these guys trying to get them to confess to it so that they could close these files. And it became just a media circus. So, you know, like, they would make Adam Walsh, the kid, remember, what was that show? America's Most Wanted. It was that Walsh guy?
Yeah, John Walsh, yeah.
John Walsh, his son was kidnapped and killed in 1981. They think it was Otis Toole that killed him. So yeah, that
decapitated him.
Yeah, it was vicious. It was really, really bad. It was bad. Mm-hmm. So Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer is basically another biopic of this Henry guy and his buddy, Otis. And it is uncompromisingly brutal. It's not very graphic, but the violence in this movie just leaves you
numb.
Like I said, you'll never look at Michael Rooker the same again, and I think this movie will stay with you for a bit.
You kill that high school boy, they're gonna slap your ass right back in jail, Otis. That's a promise.
I'd still like to kill him, though.
I bet you would.
I'd like to kill somebody.
Say that again.
I'd like to kill somebody.
Must mean you go for a ride, Otis.
In 1984, John McNaughton made a short documentary about American crime in the early 20th century for producers Malik and Waleed Ali. 2 years later, they offered him $100,000 to make a horror movie for them to release, and they gave him complete control. Make whatever you want, they said. Just make it a horror. And that's exactly what John did. He and Richard Fire wrote a script that sensationalized the mayhem of Henry Lee Lucas, and after 28 straight days of shooting, On a meager budget, Mr. McNaughton and his small team hammered out a small film that revolutionized horror in the 80s. And even though it was shot on 16mm, it was so well crafted, it was ahead of its time.
What had happened was, they made the movie in 86, and it languished on a shelf for like 3 years.
Yeah, because it was going to say this was released in the 90s.
It was released 1990 on VHS. It went straight to VHS.
I remember seeing this movie,
And what had happened was, is that it made this big backlash on VHS. They brought it to a couple of festivals, and it did really well. And then all of a sudden, it had a new theatrical release. That's how this movie went. VHS first, and then theatrical release.
Which never happens.
No, but this movie did.
Oh, Henry, this here is my sister, Becky. She's going to be staying here with us for a while, like I said. Becky, this here is Henry.
Hello, Henry.
Hello, Becky. Good to meet you.
Henry's on his way out west.
Oh, where?
California.
It's very much cast as an urban film. I think you very much get that feeling that this is a modern civilization piece. And I don't know, it just, whenever I watched it, the overpowering feeling was, this is now. You know, this is now. I don't know how else to put it than
which
that.
Is interesting, because in horror, typically American horror takes place in the boonies. It takes place in isolated communities, exactly, small towns, outside.
And this is in suburbia. This is
unlike,
is them kicking in your neighbor's door next door.
Unlike British horror, which typically takes place in city centers, is why they have Jack the Ripper and the mist, the London fog, right? And
yeah, there's a real sense that this is going on, or this can go on, or it does go on, which it does, sadly.
The first few minutes of the film paints a very grim picture of violence. You are forced to witness the aftermath of several vicious killings.
But the one thing I really liked is that we get to see all of these, the dead women, and then they have the soundtrack playing the events audio, like of what happened during the killing. But we never see him commit the murder. We never see him actually do anything. And it's kind of like their way of saying, because he is so careful about what he does, they will never connect him to these murders. No one will ever piece those two things together.
It is nice the way they do that. You hear this breaking glass and screaming.
Yeah.
And grunting and sighing and everything else that's going on.
I like how the I'll assume she was a prostitute and sitting on the toilet with the Coke bottle sticking out of her face.
Yeah, split her lip and split her nose.
And she's tied to she's tied to the door, and she's tied to the pee joint or the pee trap.
And all you hear is, "Die, you! Now you die, you fucking bitch," or something like that. Yeah.
That scene right there, as it just kind of like pans into the room and then pans into the headshot of that door.
Car wreck, that's her face.
Sets that scene right there pretty much sets the tone for the bleakness that you're in for the rest of the movie.
And did you see what I meant by it being a very urban film?
Yes.
You know, even though it showed outdoors and stuff like that, it was all very cityscape. It was to a point that it's overpowering. You know, you think about it, the whole thing seems to be surrounded by concrete and streetlights the entire time.
Well, another movie that's kind of like that is Cruisin'.
Yeah, very true.
Yeah, it's another like serial killer type movie, but set in an urban setting.
The real Henry spent 10 years of a life sentence behind bars for killing his own abusive mother during an argument.
What'd he do, kill his mama?
Uh-huh.
Come on, what was he in for?
You don't want to know.
What'd he do, rob a bank or something?
You were right the first time.
This movie cleverly suggests that every time he kills a woman, he's really just killing her again and again.
Yeah. I killed my mama. One night, it was my 14th birthday. And she was drunk, and we had an argument. She hit me with a whiskey bottle. And I shot her. I shot her dead.
I thought you said you stabbed her.
What I really enjoyed was that little detail about how he kept getting the facts about his own mother's murder wrong.
Oh, telling you that he's killing his mother again and again and again.
That he killed her with a baseball bat, he stabbed her, he shot her. That can mean so many things. Either it meant so little to him that he killed his own mother that he actually doesn't recall the exact details, that he did it in passing, like, oh, well, yeah, I killed her, I don't remember.
Or he's killed so much that he's all the ways he's killed people are just blending in.
And I'm not sure which one.
Insanity is when he's killing these women, he's actually recreating the act of killing his mother all over again.
So he's killed her all those ways.
Those are all frightening possibilities.
If you shoot somebody in the head with a .45 every time you kill somebody, it becomes like your fingerprint, see? But if you strangle one and stab another, and when you cut up, when you don't, then the police don't know what to do.
Why do we use a gun?
You could use a gun. I'm not saying you can't use a gun. Just don't use the same gun twice.
Another movie this one reminded me of was an old Charles Bronson movie called The Mechanic, which is one of my favorites. Because you get a sense that this is a professional killer. So a serial killer who's been doing this for a long time, trying to teach a new fledgling potential killer how to do it properly. And I think Henry keeps getting upset just how stupid Otis is, that he keeps making mistakes, that he's not as careful, that he does things wrong, and I think it really bothers him.
Oh yeah, well the fact, like for example, he's actually trying to school him, and Otis is too busy using the camera to film a mugging in the park, which showed a further level of the complete, the fact both these people were complete psychopaths. Right? Because they should have some response to seeing somebody getting brutalized and mugged in the park, even if it was to laugh. But these two, it was just, you know.
I think
they watched that the same way somebody would watch some ducks on a pond.
Well, it's also reminiscent of, it's not a horror movie, but of Mice and Men. Malkovich's character and Gary Sinise's character. I mean, not as brutal, obviously, but more of a developmentally delayed protege, I guess, for lack of a better word, and Gary's a more of a mature and kind of taking him under his wing type of thing. So that's what makes me think of this movie as well. I mean, obviously not to the extreme and to the horrifying things.
Well, I mean,
done,
you're talking the same end result, though.
Yeah.
In both cases, due to a messed up sense of desire, not necessarily sexual, in the case of Malkovich's character, leading to the death of an innocent. Right. So,
Tom Tolles plays Otis in the film. Tom has been in tons of genre flicks. He was in Savini's remake of Night of the Living Dead, Rob Zombie's House of a Thousand Corpses, and Stuart Gordon cast him in both The Pit and the Pendulum and Fortress. And even though we know that Otis is a dumb pervert at the beginning of this film, Henry quickly transforms this idiot into a savage killer, too.
Do it, Otis, you're a star!
That scene where they're killing family, like, first of all, put yourself in the place of the father.
Yeah.
You're lying there, you're captured, there's two men in your house, you've been beaten, you've been kicked, you have a bag over your head, and your wife is screaming bloody murder, very likely she's getting raped. All of a sudden, your son comes in, he's murdered in front of you, your wife is murdered, and you're next. What a horrific concept. But more than that, for a film that ended up in main theaters, they got as close to an actual depiction of a necrophilic act I've ever imagined would cross a screen.
But even then, the way that they portrayed Henry's psychology in this is that because of like the backstory of what happened with his mother, to him the entire like the concept of sex was so abhorrent that even after Otis had killed her and he was starting to go to town, he stopped him. He didn't even want to conceive of somebody else doing the act.
Otis! No, Otis! Otis! No! Let's go!
The original draft of the script, Otis was supposed to go full fucking necro on that corpse, but they decided to mix the idea.
Yeah, it's just that it doesn't matter how you approach it, from which individuals present, just the whole thing is just... Yeah. You almost feel like you need a shower after watching that scene.
Do you have a tarp and rubber gloves?
I got a tarp, I don't know about rubber gloves.
And Otis, I think, took it too far. He was sheepish at first, and I think he got it over his head, and I think he took it further than Henry would have. Mm-hmm. And I think Henry saw him as a liability, that eventually this was not going to end well, that they were going to get caught because of Otis's stupidity.
I don't think he really knew. I think he was feeling pressured. The way I read it was he was feeling pressured about being Becky trying to push him to go with her to wherever it was she was going back to. And I don't think things would have went the way they had went, except for the fact that Otis was trying to get, was in the process of getting on top of his sister.
Don't do that, Otis. She's your sister.
Okay, I was only kidding around, Henry.
Tell her you're sorry.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Now tell her you won't do it again.
I won't. I swear, Becky, I swear I won't.
Oh, yeah, you know he does. And finally, after several murders, Otis's debauchery becomes so insane that Henry walks in on him raping Becky, and it's time to put the mad dog down. Say goodbye to Otis.
Adios, motherfucker.
Otis did not die easy.
No.
Bravo to Toll. What's his name?
Tom Towles.
Tom Towles.
Towles. Bravo to Towles for probably one of the best deaths I've ever seen portrayed. Like, he really died fighting, and I have to say, he did a wonderful job leading out that scene.
Out of all the kills that we see in this movie, that one is by far the most brutal. Because the other ones, he's got a weapon, he's got a plan, he's breaking their neck.
They shoot them, they drop dead, they break
their
neck.
But in this one, he has to improvise, so he's taking this comb that's nowhere near long enough to reach the guy's heart, and he's just jamming it into the solar plexus and just working it up as hard as
trying
to puncture a lung.
It struck me like Very Bad Things.
Yeah.
Just hold the door! He'll bleed out!
What I think was shocking about that scene, too, was that I could have sworn I could hear him saying, I can't see. I think that's what he was saying. And that he didn't realize that he was being killed at the same moment he was still worrying about his eye. And I thought that was somehow just disturbing.
That fake head of his that he brought out and put it in, apparently that fake head cost $700. That was
really?
a piece of trivia. That fake head cost $700. Not sure who did the effects for it.
The sound effect of the body being drained into the bathtub, that was a pretty good
one. It was a quick shot of him, and it was traveling. Oh. You know, you didn't get really a chance.
We have to say, dragging the body, that blood looked perfect. Yeah. That was some of the best
the
blood I've ever seen.
The blood on that one.
Yeah, very good.
It was syrupy, it was the right color, it had
the right translucency.
Look, everything.
Henry. That was so awful. I'm scared. What do we do now?
Poor Becky. You gotta feel sorry for her. Cursed with an abusive father, a husband in jail, estranged from her child, she's now accomplice to her brother's murder seconds after he sodomized her, and now she's in love with a man who hates women so much. Nothing good can come from this.
This goes back to what you guys were saying, that if he gets sexually aroused, he has to take it out and murder, and that's probably what happened. He's like, well, we should go to bed.
There was no
distraction. She probably came onto him. And one thing led to another, and all
seriously,
of a sudden
she just had her brother's cock in her. I don't think she's going to be trying to get on.
She's
get
fucked
on
up
anybody.
Too. She's not thinking very clearly.
I think, frankly, that if anything, he would have thought that she was going to crack or
she might not even have to start anything.
She told him that she loved him after they dumped his body.
In the end, it comes down to the same thing. In my opinion, it ended way too abruptly.
Yeah, but I mean, she may not have had
very
to start
bleak,
anything because
a bleak,
before,
abrupt ending. Like they, you're left looking at that luggage, and you know it's in that fucking case.
Yeah,
you know it's in that case, and it just lets you sit there for like a good 30 seconds. Look what's in this case.
But I mean, before they were in separate rooms. He slept on the couch. She was in a room behind a closed door. This was the first time they ever shared a room together.
And no distraction.
So,
any other time, they were only left alone together for brief periods. Otis was almost always around.
I think it represented the inevitability of anybody that gets close to somebody like Henry. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you're going to get close to this guy, you will die.
Yeah.
I love you, Henry.
I guess I love you, too.
Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer. Michael Rooker.
Yes.
Like you've never seen him before.
Very chilling.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it doesn't skip a beat. He just hits every scene. It's hits that note perfectly. He never deviates.
Another thing about this movie is, like, there is zero glamour in this movie. Like, there is nothing glamorous about that. Otis's pad is a fucking shithole. Yep. He works in a shithole.
I love the comb over. Such a sloppy.
They drive shitty cars. They wear shitty clothes. They smoke. It's just
He's got the whole James Dean thing going on with the black shoes.
There's no glamour to this movie at all. Zero.
But a lot of little details in this movie I enjoy. I liked how in the beginning, before we get to see him, all we see is him crushing out that cigarette into the ashtray. And it isn't enough just to tap it out or what have you, but he takes his thumb and crushes it right in there. He takes an extra few seconds. So you get an idea of what kind of person this is. This isn't a good enough to just, you know, crush out a cigarette, but he's vicious. There's something.
He's grinding it out.
Yeah, there's something a little extra unnerving about that little detail.
And yet, thanks to Blu-ray, we can see that he still didn't completely put it out.
Yeah. I'm actually surprised that Rooker got jobs after this. And, you know, it's funny. But, I mean, you look at actors who play, you know, serial killers or, like, madmen successfully. Guys like, we were talking about Ted Levine during our 20th show, and then guys like Andy Robinson, who played Scorpio in Dirty Harry. Mm-hmm. Every time you get a portrayal that's done honestly and in a gritty fashion, people tend to think you're nuts. I can't believe I would watch this, and, you know, I mean, obviously, it's a great performance by Rooker, but he may be the one person that gets away playing a decent serial killer and still get work afterwards.
Not only did Henry revolutionize the real horror genre, it also played a part in changing the MPAA's much-feared rating system.
This was one of the films that started the NC-17 rating. This one, there was a couple other titles that they mentioned. The Cook, The Lover, this, that, and the other thing. There was three titles that came out around the same time in particular that started the whole NC-17 movement, the just for adults but non-pornographic film ratings.
Yeah, I think it was because it was still at rated R, you could have a child come in with the parents.
Yeah. Score it.
7.5.
7.5, score it.
I'll match that 7.5. Yeah.
I'll go 8.
8?
Yeah. Yeah, for some reason, I've always kind of liked movies like this where there's... I like movies with, like, completely nihilistic endings.
Good, I like that. I'll give it an 8, too. Yeah, for 110 grand, and the fact that it almost never saw the light of day, you know, like, the two guys had their fingers in the pie, they didn't like what John McNaughton had produced, and they kind of shelved it, and then it leaked out, it got, you know, they put it on VHS, it exploded, and then it found its niche. You know, it's got a great cult following even today. You mentioned Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer, and people are like, oh, yeah, that was great. It's one of those powerful movies.
Even Roger Ebert, who routinely bashed horror flicks for being mindless, violent cinema, could see that Henry was a well-crafted film, and he was firmly in the movie's corner.
There is no doubt in my mind that Henry is a powerful and important film, brilliantly directed and acted. But why should there be a film like this, a dispassionate record of a mass murderer? Well, because there are people like this, and one of the purposes of serious films is to help us see and understand the world we live in. It's an irony that mad slasher movies like the Friday the 13th series routinely get an R rating from the MPAA and play to millions of teenagers, anyone who can find that legendary 18-year-old adult guardian to go in with them. But let an artistic film come along that really sincerely considers the subject, and it's banished by the MPAA to that ghetto between the R and the X. This film deserves to be seen.
And there you have it, Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer, starring Michael Rooker and Tom Tolles, directed by John McNaughton. Truly an important film, not just because of its violence, but for its unflinching look at just how dark the world and the people who live on it truly can be. The real Henry Lee Lucas recanted most of his confessions while serving his life sentences. In the end, he was convicted of killing 11 people. At the request of the governor of Texas at the time, George W. Bush, his sentence of death was commuted, and on March 13, 2001, Lucas died in prison from heart failure. He was 64 years old. We hope you enjoyed this show. Look for us next time as we tackle Maniac, both the 1980 picture and the remake that's been floating around starring Elijah Wood. that I haven't seen yet. This will be the first time that we cover a film that I have yet to view. Should be fun. Don't miss it. For all of us here at Horror 101, this is Cash Wampum saying there's a horror movie out there that's just going to scare the hell out of you. And we're going to help you find it right here at Horror 101, educating your fears.